This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Finding the Balance, Insight to Understanding Life's Lessons. And the author is Shelley Hallmark. And Shelley joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Shelley.
Hello.
Good to have you with us. This is going to be a real good discussion, going to get everybody's juices flowing, and they're going to want to just conquer the world.
Hopefully.
Yes, you've got some great ideas, and maybe before we conquer the world, I think we have to conquer self, right?
Yes, definitely.
That's what we're going to talk about. Okay, well, here's what you say. The world can be unpredictable, presenting challenges and tests along the path to a better life. In Finding the Balance, Shelley Hallmark draws upon her own personal experiences, challenges, and past relationships to offer a navigation chart through uncertain waters. Whether you are feeling like you are at a crossroads or you just wish to enhance your own awareness, self-empowerment is the best tool you will ever have. Self-empowerment. Well, how did this all come to pass, Shelley? What motivated you to do this?
I got to a point in my life where I was starting to question and evaluate the relationships I had, you know, going on, and noticing that there was a pattern between a lot of them, and a lot of them weren't healthy relationships. So I started to kind of question it and think about it, and I normally journal every day just to kind of therapeutically walk my way through these things. And I had always been drawn to writing, and it just had hit me, like, within a minute one day I should write all of this down, because if I had had information, you know, to kind of at least have something to draw upon that I can kind of inspire my own thought from, it would have been more helpful for me going through a lot of difficult and even happy occurrences, but nonetheless, they're still occurrences, and sometimes when we're in them, it's hard to find, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, and it just occurred to me to just start writing it out, and I did. I started writing, and I didn't stop for 6 months until I was done.
And these ideas, you say, all came like a flood.
Yes. I was kind of at a point where I was, you know, I just sat down on my couch, and I was kind of pondering, you know, things that were going on. And I just turned on the TV, and the first thing that I flipped a couple channels, and then there was Wayne Dyer on doing one of his, you know, his specials. And I sat there for a moment watching it, and then it just hit me, like, all of a sudden. And I had, and I thought, that's what I should do, is write about, you know, the things that I'm going through. And, you know, it just, at least if you can share something with others that can benefit them, it just, you know, the idea is to make the world, you know, better, basically, and also offer people a form of contentment within their lives, because there's many people out there who are having lots of issues. And I got the title of the book and all the, you know, the 14 chapter titles within 5 minutes. And the next morning I started writing, like I said, 6 months later, until I was done, I just kept going.
Your purpose in life is to have a positive effect on others.
Yes, for sure. There's so much negativity in our world, and, you know, we don't need to absorb it all. It's much better if we can find, you know, put a spin on it to put it into a little bit more positive, because negativity in general is so harmful to not only our minds, but also our bodies. It causes negative effects within, even though it's not like a proven type of things, you know, with medically, but it does. It causes problems within our bodies as well. And if people can kind of move away from that and move more into happy. They're not, you know, they're going to be healthier and happier.
Well, it is a heavy weight. You see people who are what they would say are down or feel depressed. They seem to be slumped.
Yeah,
forward, you know, their head down. It's like this weight is on their back, is on their head. Mm-hmm. And I guess, is that why your first chapter is negativity?
Yes.
To start there, let's get right to the bottom line.
Yes, exactly. Because, I mean, that's the cause of many of the many or not, if not all, of the things that go on that are negative within people's lives. It's true. It's like that. You can see someone who walks in who's just right down. I mean, it's like this black cloud of, you know, right over top of them. And it is true. It's such a weight on them and they're affecting themselves, you know, negatively within and in their, you know, just in their mind. It affects everything and the people around them as well.
One of your messages, everything happens for a reason.
Yes. I really, truly believe that everything does happen for a reason. If anyone, you know, looks back on certain things that have happened that have changed the course of their life, there's usually something in there that they didn't recognize as being that was the moment of change, and that's, you know, the thing that happened that just completely changed the entire course or direction of their life. And everything does. I mean, I've looked back and thought, if that didn't happen, I might not be where I'm at right now, and you know, I'm quite content with, even though at the time when a change happens that I feel, you know, I get stressed about or I you know, resist, and then later on I find that was a good change, you know, and then I look back and I think, yeah, everything does happen for a reason.
Chapter 1, negativity. Chapter 2, manipulation. Oh, let's talk a little bit about that.
I find that there's, you know, I mean, negativity and the manipulation kind of go hand in hand, but I think that what happens is, you know, people have the negativity in their life, and they kind of use that, it becomes so prominent within their life that what ends up happening is, you know, maybe not intentionally, but they might unintentionally manipulate others or just circumstances to try and better that feeling that they're having. And unfortunately, manipulation's never a good thing. No matter, you know, what the case, it's always attached to the negativity. And a lot of times with manipulation, a lot of times people with the negativity, they're kind of, that aspect is familiar. It's a way of life that they've kind of learned, and at some point it just becomes like a natural instinct that, you know, they just manipulate people. I wouldn't say out of spite, but just kind of it becomes familiar and it becomes something that they're used to, something that they can handle and deal with, and it becomes, you know, then starts to become an everyday thing.
A way of life.
Yes.
Another key message. You can attract anything you want as long as you believe in yourself.
I completely believe that. I've experienced that firsthand. You can. It's like if you can see it, you can believe it. Everything that's out there started as a thought, no matter what it was. Like any material object that's out there or any concept or idea, it all starts as a thought, and that's the vision. So when you can visualize it and have the thought, that's the bigger part of it. It's not as much of an effort to negotiate your way to that goal, because it's just maintaining that same vision.
Thoughts precede actions.
Yes, for sure, I would say. And that goes with both actions that are, say, within your mind for thinking, and then also in your mind for when you're going to do something. And it's just that the thoughts come first, and it's whether or not, depending on how that thought is, not negative or positive, a lot of times people have a negative default thought process. And so when the thought comes in, that's a key point that people who have negativity issues need to recognize so they can kind of cut that off before they move on to the action.
Chapter 3 is discrimination. Chapter 4, respect. Chapter 5, confidence. Chapter 6, resistance. Talk about that.
I find a lot of people, whether or not they're not understanding kind of the self-help, you know, movement that's gone on. I don't know if it's that they're not understanding or if they just resist, but it takes so much more effort to resist the, you know, evolving, you know, the personal growth. It takes more effort to resist it than it does to just embrace it. And I don't think a lot of people realize that they're putting more effort into resisting it. And by doing that, it's just going to keep coming. The change is just going to keep coming, but it's just going to be harder. It's better if people just kind of, you know, change is going to happen whether or not we want it. And so it's worse to resist it because you're putting harm on, you know, in your mind and on your body.
Chapter 7, gratitude, appreciation. Chapter 8, faith. Chapter 9, forgiveness, compassion. That's key to success, forgiveness.
Yes, that's a tough one.
Yes.
I mean, I've even had that, you know, that hurdle of, you know, you have to, in order to move on from any occurrence that has been negative, you have to be able to not only, you know, I mean, it's not necessarily all about forgiving the other person. It's about forgiving yourself. That's the biggest part of it, because if you can't forgive yourself, you're going to hold on to it, you know, until the end of time. And that's, it's also the key point to being able to move on. It's once you let go of that, it's almost like a weight has just, you know, it's like you've shed a whole other person that's, you know, your same body weight. You just feel lighter, and it's amazing how so many people hold on to, you know, anger and resentment when if they were to embrace forgiveness, they'd move on and they'd be so much happier.
Chapter 10, contentment. Chapter 11, inspiration. Chapter 12, intention. Chapter 13, determining your weaknesses. Why is that important?
I think because, and then that's what I was saying at the beginning, is that I started to notice a pattern within the types of relationships I was getting involved in, whether it was friends or, you know, closer relationships. And I would find that, you know, there's certain key things that draw you to another person. And they may not necessarily be, you know, good things that are drawing you there, but you still, you know, are drawn. And determining what those are, and if you're drawing yourself into relationships that aren't healthy for you, then it's an important part to recognize what those triggers are so you can be aware of it and, you know, kind of maybe not necessarily move away from those, but just be aware of them so that you recognize it at the time when it happens and you don't get yourself into these unhealthy situations.
Under the title, the chapter about appreciation and gratitude, I'm kind of going back there, but you say it's so important not to take even the smallest things for granted.
No, even it's that's so true, because, you know, I mean, there's so many things we take for granted that we do every day without thinking. And there's other people that, you know, cannot do those simple things that we can. A good example is, you know, I saw an email one time where it was talking about, you know, to be grateful for the fact that, you know, when you have to park your car far away, you have the ability to walk up to that door. And it's those little things like that, things that we take for granted, like just, you know, the actual movement of our bodies and stuff. My daughter is, she's special needs, so she doesn't have the mobility, and it's just surprising to see how much we take for granted when I see the struggles that she has. And I've taken them for granted, too. Just simple movements.
Chapter 14, recognizing your triggers. What do you mean by triggers?
That's the triggers that I had talked about within the weaknesses. Determining your weaknesses and recognizing what those triggers are so you can either, you know, so so you can just kind of be aware of it so that you don't get yourself into the unhealthy places that you don't need to be. I always found that I was drawn to people who were maybe not necessarily negative, but just I would find that I was drawn to the people that were had difficulty within their life, always wanting to help them out and, you know, so they wouldn't stay in that negative zone, so they could see the happiness that's out there. But a lot of times, you know, and not everyone, but some people that are in a negative place, they're not always open to change. And the reason they're in the negative place, and like I say, not everyone, some people are there in a bad spot just because of circumstance only. And they're down on their luck, and it's a momentary or, you know, just a, it's not for long. But there's people who stay in those places, and that's because it's, you know, it's easier to stay there than to try to make change. And I was always drawn to those types of people to show them what, you know, what, look what you're missing, look what's out here, look at all the things you have. And I was in this perpetual, you know, state of trying to make their lives better, but to the point of neglecting myself. So that's the recognizing your triggers and what draws you, and, you know, being aware of where people really are at.
The title of the book, Finding the Balance, Insight to Understanding Life's Lessons, and the author is Shelley Hallmark. Shelley, tell us how to get your book.
It is available through my publisher, Balboa Press. Online. It's also available online at Chapters, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And I also have my own personal author website, which it's also available on there. I believe it goes to Balboa Press through when ordering, but it's through there. My website is www.shelleyhallmark.com.
Thanks for being with us, Shelley, on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out her website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central, on toginet.com.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Get ready for So You Think You Can Host, a radio contest with Kathy Bagan. Thursday afternoons at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet. So You Think You Can Host is a radio contest where you, the audience, get to choose who will be TogiNet's next great host. You, the audience, will get to choose and vote for who your favorite contestant is. And then when we tally and announce the winners at the end of the contest, someone's going to win a radio show. Every week, we'll bring new contestants with the most entertaining topics. Be sure to check out our voting page at SoYouThinkYouCanHost.com. Now, your host for all this is Kathy Bagan with Rise and Shine Products. You need to check out her website at WakeUpOnTime.com. So join us, won't you, for So You Think You Can Host, a radio contest and show with Kathy Bagan. Thursday afternoons at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Soul Reunion, Understanding Where We Came From, Embracing Who We Are. And the author is Laura Day. And Laura joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this special interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Laura.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good to have you with us. Now, I'm going to read what you've written about your book, Soul Reunion. You say this: Come and take your place at God's table. Partake of the spiritual feast that has been sustaining faithful children of God since the very beginning of time. And as with all family gatherings, there will be laughter and tears in abundance. God has set a place just for you. And even in the deepest spiritual hunger, you will be filled to overflowing. Laura, that's obviously you're feeling a lot of things writing an introduction like that. What brought you to the place to publish this book?
It was actually a pretty long process. Steve, about 3 years ago, my husband and I were transferred from our longtime home in Orlando to the Tampa Bay area. And my husband and I have always been very deeply involved in our church where we live and in spiritual things, in teaching and mentoring. But when we got here, there was almost a cooling period. There wasn't a clear moment or a clear path that was being set before me. So I really had to stop and pray about what it is that God was trying to show me to do. Then at a certain time, I was asked to help with our women's ministry. And I thought, you know, I know women. I really do know women. But one thing I do know about women is you can't just, you know, fly in with your cape and go, I'm here to save the day. That, you know, really doesn't fly with women. And I thought, I want them to be able to relate to me, and I want to join with them, and let's create a team and figure out what God wants us to do and what direction He wants to go. And what was revealed during that time was we really just needed to get back to basics and understand, number one, who God is, and number two, who we are to God. And I felt like the best way to do that was to go back and look at our biblical history. And when we started in Hebrews chapter 11 and looked at the faith of our ancient forefathers, and we went back and we studied those stories in depth and really delved deeper into the original language and what was meant for the readers at that time, what became completely apparent is that it's also meant for us and our time. It's completely applicable to everyday living, to me and to you today. And that, to me, was just astonishing. It was so uplifting and so encouraging to see that our forefathers faced many of the challenges that we face today, and that God was with them all the way because they loved Him and they wanted to honor Him. And in turn, He was always faithful.
Now, you went back into the original language, the Hebrew, the Greek?
Yes.
That is a major undertaking, obviously. A lot of effort gone into research.
It was. It was a major undertaking, and I actually kind of embraced that with a little chagrin. I was not a big fan of history in my junior high and high school days, so I find it pretty funny that I am a huge fan of biblical history. It has really jazzed me up. I enjoy it. I embrace it. I devour it. And I think to myself, isn't that funny that somebody who really never enjoyed learning about history, I really enjoy it. And to go back and look at those original languages, I'll tell you what, it wasn't easy. I don't know Hebrew. I don't know Greek. So it was time consuming. However, worth every single minute of research.
Now you talk about stories, you talk about our forefathers. Give us kind of an overview at first here of how your book is structured, because you have personal stories and you also have stories about our forefathers like Abraham.
Yes. I'll tell you, when we went back and looked at each of these references from Hebrews 11, and where it says, by faith we know that the world was created at God's command. And we went back and looked at the story of creation through Genesis. I thought to myself, this is very powerful for me not just to know, but to embrace. I need to take ownership of that. The God that I worship literally can speak, and it happens. So for Him to be sovereign over every aspect of my life, it gives me such joy to allow that. And I look back at Moses, and I think he didn't really want to confront Pharaoh. He was completely resistant. I can so completely relate to that. There are so many things in my life that are very apparent that I need to address, and I'm resistant to those things. And I have found myself at times in arguments with God over what he clearly has set before me to be a sovereign aspect of my life, and I'm not willing to take that step. It was encouraging to me to watch Moses, through those stories, go through the same process and see that the sovereignty of God was accomplished because Moses was faithful enough to take those steps, even in spite of his fear and his reservations. And then when we got to Abraham, that's when it really happened for me. I thought, this was such a long and challenging process. And God had a place where he needed Abraham to be. God knew the destination where Abraham was going. But it all started with that first step. I mean, Abraham had to leave everything he knew, everything that made him comfortable, everything that made him secure. God asked him to leave it behind. And that's a major thing for us to really know and to understand. We take so many of the things in our life and we make them our security. We make them what our security depends on. And I had to come to realize sometimes we have to really surrender those things in order to receive the true destination and the true security that God has in store for us. And I watched this man leave everything behind. And I watched him collect all of his belongings. And in my mind, I could see him just traipsing across this hot desert in the caravan. And I can see him, you know, with this name, Abram, that means exalted father, and feeling almost a shame within that name because he had no heirs. He had no children, and he was very aged. And to see the process that happens when he has these encounters with God and God promises him and makes a covenant promise with him that he will have heirs as numerous as the stars of the universe. But at that point, it's still another 25 years before that promise is fulfilled. And I think to myself, how often have I thought of God as a drive-thru? You know, I see the promises of God and I feel like I'm going to drive right up and I'm going to say, oh, I know you're going to promise this because you're true to your promises, God. So would you please honor me with this? And I expect that's going to happen. He's going to deliver that to me almost immediately. And I've really enjoyed the lessons and the strength that come with having to sit and wait for God to accomplish what he needs to accomplish. I will tell you, some of it was not fun. You know, there was a period of time when we almost lost our daughter, Anna. And I had to sit in a hospital room waiting for a doctor to tell me one way or the other whether or not their treatment plan was going to work or whether or not it had been successful. I remember, I mean, I can go back in my mind's eye right this minute, and I can feel the coolness of that room. I can see the darkness of that room. I remember we shut the door because we didn't want anyone to interrupt us. It was so intense. And we just sat there, and we had prayed so much up to that point. We had prayed and prayed and prayed for God to do what God needed to do to heal our daughter. And I thought to myself, isn't it interesting that I thought all these years, here I am almost 50 years old, and I thought all these years when I prayed, I really was sitting at the feet of God. But at that very moment, I thought, I am in his presence, and he's comforting me, and he knows I have a desperate, desperate need. And I thought to myself, I know, he's going to give me what I need. If it's my daughter, I'm going to rejoice. If it's not my daughter, he's going to give me the comfort and strength that I need to get through it. And when we finally received our daughter back and she was well and she was whole, I remember thinking to myself, I will never, ever forget that moment. And I related that so much to Abraham and the time that he had to wait he had to wait so long, but he knew in the core of his very being that God was going to deliver to him the very thing he promised.
And as you write, so many Christians nowadays find themselves in a sea of confusion. In fact, hostile opposition to people of faith.
Oh, yes. That is, well, do you? I've seen it often.
That's right.
Our current culture really is in a pretty hostile opposition to people of faith. They even sometimes make fun of us and think of us as, oh, quaint or ignorant or, oh, isn't that cute? You know, you still believe that. And it's really difficult to have that swirling around you at all times. I was just recently on a plane coming back from a visit from one of my daughters, and I was sitting next to the most lovely young military man, and he was telling me some things about his life, and, you know, I thanked him for keeping us safe. And then I went about my business. Later on in the flight, there were some others that gathered around him, and I thought to myself, I can't believe the language I'm hearing. It was just an assault on my ears. But the way that they spoke was so clearly commonplace to them. And the curse words and the opposition to any kind of purity, I thought to myself, this is just the world that we live in. People do not want to hear about God. They don't want to hear any kind of references to living in a walk of faith or trying to maintain spiritual and physical purity. They don't want to hear that because the world around us is saying, take what you want, take it now, do your own thing. You're the master of your own universe. It's really becoming foreign in our culture to see people who really genuinely embrace their faith and actively practice it.
You say, I think this book will appeal to any Christian who is seeking a deeper understanding of who they are in Christ and a clearer vision of how to remain faithful and keep following God where He is leading them.
I do believe that. I have received a lot of feedback from the initial people that received sample copies of the book, and it's so interesting to me because often I'll be asked, well, what's one point that everyone can take away? And there really isn't just one point because everyone begins their journey when they pick this book up in a different place. And therefore, they're going to receive the lessons differently. It's going to mean something different to every person. However, everyone can find themselves moving along this journey and receiving the lessons that will help them continue on. And I think the conversations that I put in there, it really is just a let's just sit down and chat a while book. I sit there and I talk to them about my own family and the lessons that I've learned from it in the hopes that in the end that they're going to be able to say, you know, she's really that not that different from me and her family isn't that different from my family. And therefore, they can also look back and look at our spiritual forefathers and say, you know, they weren't that different from us either. They faced challenges. They had victories. They had failures. They had moments of doubt. They had long periods of doubt. They had longings that weren't satisfied. They had frustrations. They faced the very same things that we face every single day, which then brings to the point God's word is relevant and it's active and it's living and it's applicable every single day of our life. It's absolutely current and it's absolutely relevant.
The title of the book, Soul Reunion, Understanding Where We Came From, Embracing Who We Are. And the author is Laura Day. Laura, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can find my book through Westbow Press. You can order it there, or you can actually even find it on Amazon.com.
Laura, thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, this special interview brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Thanks a lot, Laura.
Thank you so much. Enjoyed being here.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible?
Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show. Every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles. And then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, LeahJansen.com. That's Leah, LeahJansen.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen. And listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Bridging the Gap, The Seventh Day, Who Was Early Man? Volume 2, Age of Phenomenal Accomplishments. And the author is H. Donald Doe. And Don joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this special interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Don.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good to have you with us. First question, how did you come to write this book? What was the motivation?
This book is the result of intensive research that I've done since November of 1970 when I was asked to teach an adult elective class on geology, archaeology, and the Bible at a local Christian Missionary Alliance church in Calgary, Alberta. This book reveals the amazing compatibility that exists between the record of the Bible with the record of geology, paleoarchaeology, and paleoanthropology.
Who does the book appeal to and why?
It appeals mainly to persons who have an inquisitive mind and want to know more about the mystery surrounding early man. How does early man differ from modern man? Did early man evolve from an ape hominid ancestry as Darwinists would want us to believe? Or was early man a direct descendant of Adam and Eve? Can a person trace our ancestry to early man? What happened to early man? What is the origin of death and suffering? When and why did the earth, which includes you and I, experience death?
What one thing do you want readers to learn from your book?
That one can trust the geological sciences as they relate to the earth. One can trust the long geological ages of the earth. There are only two basic ways to interpret the geologic history of early man, and one is by a Darwinian evolutionary process. The other is based upon acknowledging the result of a carefully pre-planned work of an intelligent designer and creator God.
What scenes would you like to highlight from your book?
Like scene one, why did God create the earth? In the beginning, God created the earth to be inhabited, according to Isaiah 45:18, when he says, "Thus says the Lord who created the heavens, who is God who formed the earth and made it, who did not create it in vain, who formed the earth to be inhabited. I'm the Lord and there is no other.
And then there's scene two, and you're going to take us through quite a few scenes.
Yes. In scene two, we observe a time of great joy and jubilation in God's third or highest heaven, because God had just created and prepared the earth as a place of habitation for Lucifer and his angels. We read in Job 38:7, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Lucifer was one of the morning stars, and the sons of God are referred to as God's angels. These are the ones who were rejoicing and singing because God had just prepared the earth as a place of habitation.
Scene three.
We are then given a glimpse of this beautiful, magnificent garden called Eden that God created for Lucifer and his angels on earth during the early part of the first day of creation. It was decked with beautiful gemstones that encompassed the entire earth. From a distance, the earth would have appeared as a beautiful, magnificent, shining gemstone. We read in Ezekiel 28:13, you, Lucifer, were in Eden, the garden of God. This garden was decked with every precious stone, such as the sardius, topaz, diamond, beryl, onyx and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes were prepared for you on the day you were created. This indicates Lucifer's ability to sing and to play instruments.
Scene four.
The earth was now a most beautiful and magnificent place when the first inhabitants arrived. The inhabitants were Lucifer and a host of angels under his jurisdiction. The earth became a place of joy and gladness. This was truly Earth's first golden age that relates to the present geological basement granite type of rocks called the Precambrian Archean Age. According to geology, this first Garden of Eden was created by God about 4.5 to 4.6 billion years ago. This geological age has always been a mystery to geologists because no evidence of water or laid sediments or fossilized life has ever been found within the great Precambrian shield regions of the earth. This beautiful Garden of Eden would have continued as a beautiful, wonderful paradise for about 800 plus million Earth years. This is based upon radioactive methods of dating.
Scene five.
Suddenly, this golden age came to a sudden termination. The Bible says sin was found in the heart of Lucifer. We read in Ezekiel 28:17, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. There is an old adage that says pride comes before the fall. Then we read in Ezekiel 28:16-18, by the abundance of your trading, you, Lucifer, became filled with violence within, and you have sinned. You have defiled your sanctuaries. This is places of worship by the multitude of your iniquities. It is believed that possibly a third of the angels that were with Lucifer in this first beautiful Garden of Eden were lured into a life of sin and entered into a life of open rebellion against Almighty God. God's judgment fell upon Lucifer, who became known as Satan, and the angels who sinned became known as evil spirits or demons. At that moment in time, the earth became a dark, sin, cursed planet. It was at this time that the day and night cycle, the evening and the morning, commenced, which equates to the termination of the Archean Age about 3.0 billion years ago.
Scene six.
It was at this time in the geological history of the earth that God looked forward through the quarters of time, and he saw the second Garden of Eden, where he would one day create Adam and Eve. His plan was to give Adam and Eve a choice, to either follow him or to follow the evil one. This is the same choice that you and I have to make today.
Scene 7.
After God pronounced judgment upon Lucifer, he brought about the dramatic birth of the oceans. He washed the earth with water and created the first life in the form of bacteria and water, plants called algae, where they are preserved in these water-laid sediments today. God then began to create the first marine plant and animal life. Then later he created land plants and land animals. Geologists have found the first evidences of life and death to be present at the base of these oldest protozoic sediments. This verifies that the Edenic curse resulting from the fall of Lucifer commenced at the beginning of this geological age called the Protozoic period. The Edenic curse has resulted in the death of all species of plant and animal life right to the present day.
Scene 8.
God prepared a beautiful second Garden of Eden within the last 10,000 years. It is decked with beautiful flowers, fruit trees, vegetables that were food for man. God created domestic animals, birds, chickens. He also created the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Then God created Adam and Eve in his own image in this beautiful garden and gave them a certain choice. In Genesis 2:16-17, we read, "And the Lord God commanded the man, 'You are to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat of it, you shall surely die.'" In disobedience to God, Adam and Eve sinned by eating the forbidden fruit. God then provided a plan of redemption, whereby Adam and Eve could be reconnected with God Almighty once again by covering them with coats of skin. The shed blood of a clean animal was required to cover their sin. God then drove them out of the garden. Adam's sin resulted in what is called the Adamic curse. Every descendant of Adam and Eve, which includes you and I, have been born with a sinful nature inherited from Adam. We've all come under the Adamic curse, which results in eventual death. We all need to be redeemed, similar to Adam and Eve.
Scene 9.
Anthropologists have determined that there were only two basic types of true human beings called early man that relate to the pre-flood Great Stone Age Pleistocene Ice Age. They are referred to as the Neanderthal and the Cro-Magnon man. The Cro-Magnon man inhabited Europe, Western Asia, and Africa. The Neanderthal man mainly occupied Eastern Asia, China, Australia, North and South America. This was during the latter part of the Pleistocene Ice Age that is referred to as the Altithermal Age. The Neanderthal man had a receding chin, a low forehead, heavy brow ridges, and a long, narrow skull. Darwin has always referred the Neanderthal man as an inferior type of person that was just in the process of evolving from an ape ancestry. He is referred to as a missing link between modern man and ape-like hominids that can be traced back in time for 2 to 3 million years. However, it is interesting to note that the classical Neanderthal man also had a brain capacity greater than 1,630 cubic centimeters. This has been conveniently ignored. This is a great endowment for a missing link. The Cro-Magnon man had a pronounced chin, a well-domed, narrow Nordic head. He often had a brain capacity greater than 1,600 cubic centimeters. The average brain capacity of man today is about 1,350 to 1,500 cubic centimeters. The Cro-Magnon man is believed by Darwinists to have evolved from the Neanderthal man. This has made the Cro-Magnon man to appear to be superior. the Neanderthal man mysteriously became extinct at the end of the Pleistocene Ice Age. This is another reason why Darwinists believe that the Cro-Magnon man is a superior person who was able to survive to the present day. All humans, human beings on Earth today, regardless of their race, are Cro-Magnon people.
Scene 10.
The flood of Noah was a real event. This book documents, on the basis of geology, the authenticity of Noah's flood as being a global, worldwide event.
How would you introduce your book to a friend in a couple of sentences, Don?
This book answers the question as to the origin of early man. It also reveals why the 70 racial groups of modern man today all relate to the Cro-Magnon man. It also explains what happened to the Neanderthal man.
Don, give us some concluding thoughts about what the Earth looked like.
During the time when the Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon man lived throughout the world, Canada and Northern Europe and Asia were covered with several thousand feet of glacial ice because they lived at the very end of the Pleistocene Ice Age. And they lived coinciding with prehistoric animals like the saber-toothed tiger, the now extinct elephants called the mastodon, the woolly mammoth, the giant beaver, giant sloths, and so on. The question arises, what happened to these strange prehistoric animals? What happened to the glacial ice? The Neanderthal man also mysteriously became extinct. Only the Cro-Magnon man survived this major time of worldwide extinctions. This book, Bridging the Gap, The Seventh Day, Who Is Early Man, Volume 2, Age of Phenomenal Accomplishments, will answer these perplexing questions. Today, there are 70 racial groups of man on Earth, but every person today, regardless of their racial background, have only Cro-Magnon characteristics. This mystery of what happened to the Neanderthal man is resolved in this book.
Don, tell us how to get your book.
You can order this book through Westbow Press or through Amazon.com or through going to our website at www.gira.ca. That's Genesis International Research Association.
Don, thanks for being on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Thanks, Don.
You're welcome. Thank you for this privilege.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.